The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And, I normally come here and offer a talk that I've prepared and thought about. And what I'd like to do today is a little different. I've done this before, and I enjoy this, is to kind of create the talk with you. So take themes, questions from the room. I'll take, I don't know, four or five different thoughts of something you might like to hear about. And then I will create a talk, kind of on the fly. it could be a question about meditation practice, or it could be a theme that you've heard about, but I'd just like to hear a little bit more information about, or pretty much anything in the realm of the practice and what we do here. So, one in the back here.
I'd like to hear about self-compassion and loving kindness.
Okay. Up here.
I have an extremely sort of practical question. I feel I'm getting better dealing with thoughts that come to me while I'm meditating, but when a song pops into my head, I feel like all my strategies for dealing with thoughts are useless, and I try not to get annoyed. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts on, like, when something other than active thinking, maybe a scene from the day sort of replays in your head, and it's not the same as thinking, it's not the same as thought, or a song comes in and it just carries itself in a way that's different from thought. So if you comment on that, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks. Sometimes it feels vulnerable to ask a question or to put something out there. And I just want to encourage you that if you have a question, you can think of it as a gift or an offering to the room, because probably several other people in the room would have the question too.
Yes, could you explain a little bit the concept of concentration in meditation?
Okay. And those, at least two of those topics are pretty big ones, so I'll stick with three today. So I want to start by looking at the question of self-compassion and loving kindness, and these qualities are essentially, I look at them as qualities where the heart is not fighting with reality. When there's a sense of connectedness with experience, either with I mean, loving kindness and compassion can be related to our relationship with other people, but they can also be related to our relationship with our experience. So just to start there, actually, that the qualities can be present in relationship with others, but also in relationship to ourselves and to our own experience. So kindness, I like to think of kindness, loving kindness, as the kind of foundational open heart quality that when the heart is non-resistant and when the heart is kind of relaxed, we could say maybe the relaxed heart, there's a sense of connection with both experience and with others, people. And there, in that connection, there can be a kind of flow. The Pali word metta is usually translated as loving kindness, but the root of that word basically means friend. And so it's kind of a friendly quality. The quality of metta can just begin with that sense of caring about yourself, caring about others in a very simple way. You know, so that can be where that quality begins. So the quality of kindness as a kind of foundational quality is I look at it as being the basic emotional quality of a heart that is open and non-resistant. And when that open heart meets struggle, meets suffering, then compassion is how that open heart resonates. And I think about the open heart being just a heart that can meet whatever comes, and that the response of that open heart will be different depending on what comes. That open heart will respond with joy when there is beauty and happiness and success. And that heart will respond with compassion when there is struggle and suffering. And so these qualities, the quality of love of the open heart, kind of mutates in a way depending on what's happening in our lives. So the quality of love, of kindness, can be cultivated actively by practicing, and I'll talk about that on Saturday. That'll be the day long. I'll talk about working with cultivating this quality actively, bringing the quality into our hearts in a conscious way, trying to direct our attention towards cultivating that quality. But it can also be cultivated by beginning to recognize both when it's present kind of spontaneously, which it is. You know, it comes up in our day. It comes up in our day as we go through our day and meet with people. You know, we see, you know, even simple things, like we see a small child seeing the joy of walking on squishy earth. And there's a kind of a happiness, a connection, a feeling when the heart is open. If we're not wound up in our thoughts, there's a kind of an openness to that. And a joy, a sense of happiness that comes, a connection that comes. And so we can just recognize when the heart feels open and receptive and connected, kind, caring, friendly. And just recognize that, just notice that. Sometimes those moments go by us and we don't really connect with them. We don't really recognize them. And so just recognizing when they happen can help us to cultivate that quality, to deepen in it, to learn how to resonate more with that quality in our lives. Another way to explore working with love, kindness, friendliness, is to notice what gets in its way. You know, notice when it's hard. And then not resist that, not fight that, but just can there be the recognition, oh, this, when I'm tired or when things are not going well for me, it's much harder for me to be open and receptive. It's much harder for me to be friendly. So noticing the conditions that get in our way. And paradoxically, that willingness to be friendly with the things that get in the way, to have a quality of kind-heartedness towards our own difficulty being kind-hearted, that can help us to both learn about the things that get in our way and cultivate that kindness by essentially being kind to ourselves when it's difficult. And this is one of the ways I really like to talk about and explore the quality of kindness, is through the practice of mindfulness, through the practice of awareness itself, that essentially the practice of cultivating mindfulness, of meeting experience, meeting whatever is happening with a receptive, relaxed mind, essentially it's cultivating metta, kindness, friendliness on the sly, in a way. You know, it's like that willingness to meet whatever's happening in our experience brings along the quality of friendliness with it, because we are not resistant. We are cultivating non-resistance. We're cultivating non-resistance to what's happening. Even when that what's happening is a challenging thing, even when what's happening is anger or frustration, what we think of as the opposite of kindness. If we're friendly, if we can have a friendly attitude in our mind towards frustration, anger, irritation, it takes us in the direction of cultivating that quality of a friendly heart. So this is cultivating it inwardly, cultivating it in our inner landscape, this quality of kindness in our inner landscape. So this meeting our experience, as we meet our experience with mindfulness, we meet a lot of suffering in our own experience. You know, it's amazing how difficult it is to be a human being, and how much we struggle, how much we fight things, how much we fight the world, how much we fight relationships with other people. You know, we want people to be a different way. We want things in the world to be a different way. And in opening our hearts to what's happening in the world, we meet how much we suffer, how much we struggle, along with meeting how much everybody else suffers and struggles. So we meet that, and if we can begin to cultivate that open-heartedness towards what's happening in our own hearts, our own suffering, when we meet our own suffering with that non-resistant quality of mind and heart, there's the possibility for self-compassion. As mindfulness meets suffering, I mean, as kindness meets suffering, compassion is the natural response. If the heart is open and non-resistant, compassion is the natural response of that open heart. And so if we can have an open heart about even our own suffering, it begins to point us in the direction of compassion for ourselves, of that self-compassion. In fact, it's not, it begins to be natural. When we understand, we understand actually through the meeting of experience that the way that we suffer, the ways that we struggle, are not unique to ourselves alone. You know, that we see, I mean, we see the specifics of our suffering are probably unique, but the general patterns we begin to recognize through watching our minds, we begin to see, you know, pretty much everyone suffers and struggles in some way or other. And we begin to recognize that our suffering, our struggling, is pointing to something more universal. It's not just about me. That the patterns and ways that we get caught and suffer in our lives are very universal. You know, some of the main ways we get caught and suffer in our lives is that we want something that we can't have. We have something that we don't want in our lives. We want things to be different. And the reflection on that, we see, you know, it's not just me. You know, maybe this particular instance of it is my particular version of wanting things to be other than they are. But that pattern is a human pattern. It's a human pattern that when there are pleasant things out there, we like them, we want them, we want to keep them, we want to hold on to them. If we get them, if we have them, then we get afraid of losing them. If there's unpleasant things in our environment, in our world, we want to get rid of them, to push them away. Very natural, very normal push-pull. You know, pleasant things, we like them, we want them. Unpleasant things, we want to get rid of them. It kind of fits in with our biology in a way to have pleasant things and get rid of unpleasant things. They're very natural to be pulled towards pleasant and put, you know, go away from unpleasant. But we think, I mean, one of the ways we've oriented our lives is to try to find happiness by arranging our world to suit what we'd like. And we can do that for brief times, for brief moments, for brief situations. We can construct something perhaps that is there for a little while, but, you know, it doesn't last very long. And so then we're, you know, trying to do it again. And I've recently, you know, came up with this image of like trying to keep a sandcastle together. You know, the waves are coming in and we're madly trying to shore up the sand and it's just slipping away, slipping away, slipping away on all sides. And we're madly trying to, oh, it's slipping away over there, let me build it up. Oh, it's slipping away over there, let me build it up. And that's how we live our lives, and it's exhausting. And we see this in our exploring our minds, exploring our minds with mindfulness, watching how we get caught. We see that this is our pattern, and it's not just me, it's a human pattern to engage with this. And that connecting to the humanity of it, connecting to the poignancy of so many people trying so hard to be happy and doing all the things that actually are just exhausting them. There's a kind of a heartbreaking poignancy to that that points us in the direction of compassion, not only for ourselves but for others, and or perhaps easier to say and feel, not only for others but for ourselves. We see that there's not so much of a distinction between self and other, and that the compassion that we feel when we see somebody struggling, you know, the compassion that we feel when we see a child hurt in pain, you know, that compassion is the same compassion that can meet our own suffering. It is challenging. Self-compassion is somehow for us not an easy opening. And, you know, in the teachings around compassion, it's acknowledged that it's harder to have compassion for ourselves. They actually recommend if you're cultivating compassion, if you're actively cultivating compassion, that it's helpful to start where it's easy, which is generally seeing someone in distress, that, you know, someone, perhaps not someone very close to you, perhaps a neutral person in distress tends to be the easiest place to feel compassion. When it's somebody close to us, often there's a lot of stickiness around the suffering. We either take it personally or we fear what will happen to them if they stay in that suffering state. We fear what's going to happen to our relationship. So our own emotional response can get in the way of just the open heart of meeting suffering. And back to that, you know, this story just rose in my mind. I remembered this circumstance that happened in my life to connect being present, being mindful with that compassion, that open-heartedness. I was with a friend one day, and my friend was kind of going through reliving some difficult situations from childhood. They were coming up present in the present moment, and there was a lot of pain in my friend in the present moment. And I just began trying to be as present as I could, non-resistant to my friend's suffering. And he was talking a little bit and just being with his experience a little bit, and I was just trying to be present for him and for what was going on. And a couple of days later, he came back to me and asked me if I was doing metta, was consciously, working with the open heart with him. And I said, no, what I was working with was just trying to be present and non-resistant, you know, just being there. I was just trying to be there with you. And he had felt it as kindness and compassion. So, you know, that's an example, I think, of how that presence with suffering can kind of naturally turn towards compassion. And that presence with our own suffering can naturally turn towards self-compassion. We may not feel it as that initially. I know that for myself, the feelings, the emotional side of things was slow for me to develop. The ability to be with the emotional side of things was slower for me to develop. I spent a lot of time, you know, kind of checking in. Well, what's the emotion that's here? Well, I have no idea. Okay. And so I just spent a lot of time checking in to, you know, what's happening in my heart and my mind and trying to learn the emotional language of the heart. And these qualities of kindness and compassion in particular, I had a very strong sense of being able to be with experience, like with my friend, you know. I could be with my friend, but I wasn't consciously aware of compassion. My friend felt it as compassion, but I wasn't consciously aware of compassion. And I talked about this with one teacher, and my teacher said, it's actually probably right there. You're just not turning towards it. And he suggested I turn towards the connected quality as opposed to the sense of presence. And so I began exploring that, and it was right there. So the compassion was right there, the kindness was right there in the willingness and ability to be present. But it did take some time for me to learn what it was and learn how it felt. I remember another time I was in a situation where I was experiencing quite a bit of struggle. There was something difficult, quite difficult happening in my life. And I was really working with trying to, you know, get everything done that I needed to get done, and was working with being present. And at some point, I felt like, you know, I was just trying to be with my experience. And the sense was, something's off here. Something feels off. What is it? What is it that feels off? And I was trying to dig for it, but at some point I just thought, well, let me just allow it. Let me just be with this feeling that feels off. And it hit me that it was self-compassion. And the off feeling there is the heart that is meeting suffering. There's a sense of, now Jack Kornfield talks about it as being the quivering of the heart that is open to suffering. And that quivering is not at rest. It has a sense of wanting to take action to relieve the suffering. So that's a part of compassion. And so self-compassion, that it actually brought tears to my eyes when I realized, oh, this is self-compassion. This quality of this heart that, and it's hard to describe, but you know, that kind of opening that I felt there, but it was a recognition. I think it touched into that universal nature of suffering and how we're not alone in the ways that we suffer. And that can open the heart. And so, you know, kindness, compassion can be brought to our mindfulness practice, you know, that orientation of friendly attention in our mindfulness practice, so paying attention to the breath. Can we be friendly as we pay attention to the breath? Can we have a sense of a friendly attention, kind attention, loving attention? That's a way to connect a little bit with the quality of metta as we're paying attention. And in cultivating that friendly attention, that kind attention, when there's suffering, it can transmute into this self-compassion. So difficult experiences, things that arise that we don't like in our experience, like songs arising in the mind. One of the ways to approach that, one of the key ways I've seen is helpful, is that essentially we're kind of in combat with our minds when it's doing things that we don't like. It's doing things out of control, right? I mean, this kind of thing, the mind going through movies or rerunning scenes or singing songs, it's often we have a sense of it being out of control. Especially the songs, you know, it's like, yeah, I'd stop it if I could, you know, I'd stop it if I knew how to stop it. And so we end up in a kind of a combative relationship because we don't like it. We don't like the thing that's happening, and we also don't like the fact that our minds are out of control. So one of the real shifts in our practice is allowing, bringing a sense of kind attention to whatever it is. You know, paradoxically, the very resistance to things like songs running in the head, the mind trying to get rid of it, trying to stop it. Somehow that very trying to stop or repress or get rid of manages to fuel it, kind of keep it going in a way. And so I've really seen a great appreciation for the quality of non-resistance to those out-of-control aspects of our mind. This is the first approach I use with something like that. I will see if I can allow it and know it. It's not allowing it and trying to figure out how to stop it. It's allowing it and knowing it. And that if that allowing itself has that quality of kindness again. So can there be a sense of friendliness towards those out of control sides of our mind? The out of control sides of our mind get us into trouble when we're not mindful of them. I mean, the singing songs in your mind doesn't necessarily get you into trouble. It's often just annoying. The annoyance and trying to get rid of is back to one of those habitual human patterns, one of those universal kind of human patterns that there's something we don't like and we want to get rid of it. And so we're adding an aversive, unfriendly, unkind, uncompassionate state of mind to our experience and compounding the problems. Essentially, when there's something unpleasant happening, we often react to it with an unpleasant, aversive mind state. So we add, the Buddha talked about when there's something unpleasant happening, that's like, you know, being hit by a dart or by an arrow. And then the reaction to it, the wanting to get rid of it, is like being hit by a second dart. He didn't quite say it this way, but it's kind of like we pick up another dart and stab ourselves with when we react with aversion. Because that aversion to what's happening is extra. It's not necessary. We can meet what is happening in our minds. And when our minds are out of control, when our minds are just doing something like that, and we can't stop it, essentially it's kind of like we're coming into alignment with reality when we recognize this is what's happening right now. Singing in the mind is what's happening right now. It's possible to know that, to recognize that. And if you, with a very kind attention, you could even try to be friendly in the way you recognize it. Sometimes using the noting can be helpful around this. It's like, oh, singing is happening. Oh, singing is happening right now. If we can meet that in a non-reactive way, the momentum of that thing that's happening, because, you know, everything that happens in our experience has a life. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. And something like singing a song, you know, if we're just allowing it without either trying to stop it or be involved with it. And that's kind of the other side of it, you know. There's a song that comes up for a while. I was really liking this one song, and, you know, I would listen to it when it came on the radio, and then it would go in my head, and I'd kind of sing along with it. And then it started taking on a life of its own, and then it's like, oh, I'm really getting tired of this song. I don't want this song in my head anymore. So when we jump on the song and start adding to it, singing with it, that's like we're cultivating that song. And when we're trying to push it away, that's adding the unpleasant, aversive quality to the already unpleasant experience. And so there's this middle way. The Buddha taught the middle way. Can you be with something, neither encouraging it or discouraging it, neither acting on it nor repressing it? And this includes things like thoughts running through your mind, movies, scenarios, images running through your mind out of control, can you just recognize this is what's happening? This is what's happening right now. The songs in particular tend to be, you know, they don't tend to have too much negativity necessarily. You know, songs can just run. And sometimes I've seen actually in meditation a song will appear and it's like a coded Dharma instruction, you know. It gives me, you know, like, you can't always get what you want. I can't get no satisfaction. Sometimes the songs come up kind of reflective of what's happening in our experience. And, you know, if we can take them that way as opposed to resisting them, it's like, okay, there's some information there. So that willingness to meet with a kind attention, neither resisting nor encouraging, is the first thing I will do with something like a song in my head. And I will use the noting. I will use something like, oh, singing is happening. Singing's happening right now. Okay, yep. And just be mindful of it. And most of the time when I do that and I'm not resisting it, it disappears within 10 or 15 seconds. Most of the time. So that's when there's something happening that is out of our control like that, and it's not, and sometimes out of control things happen in our mind, like a memory will arise that is a replay of something that happened, and that replay of something that happens is like taking us down the rabbit hole of some really challenging emotion, almost re-traumatizing us about something that happened. You know, something traumatic happened to us and a memory about it comes and the memory plays and we get caught into that whirlpool. If that's happening, then generally it's not possible to say, oh, memory is happening in the present moment. You know, the mind isn't that stable to be able to do that. It's not that able to be present for that experience in the moment. And so if you see something like that happening, I usually suggest do what it takes to put your attention on something else. It's not trying to stop or repress necessarily what's that pattern that's so strong. But it is turning your attention elsewhere. And so that's another approach to things out of control in the mind. We usually can't stop them, but sometimes we can turn our attention to something else. We can put our attention on something and be mindful of it. I generally don't recommend distracting yourself, like with television or something, or fantasy, because often a distracted, non-mindful mind is going to easily get caught back into a loop of a story and go back down that rabbit hole. And so finding some way to be present for something really simple. For myself, when I had a pattern of anger that kept coming up over and over again, and I realized that when I tried to be mindful of it, I just got pulled down the rabbit hole of that anger. And I finally realized, oh, well, when anger comes up, maybe what I need to do is turn my attention to something else. And so I started practicing that. When I saw the anger come up, I would acknowledge it clearly. Okay, I see you, anger. I see you. And I see I'm not able to meet you right now. So, you know, I'm just going to put my attention on my feet. I was often walking when this happened. So put my attention on my feet. And just was with the sensations of my feet. I personally found something neutral the most helpful when I was being pulled into the whirlpool of a rabbit hole. Turning my attention to something neutral. Sensations of hands, experience of hearing. Sometimes going out into nature was hugely helpful. On one retreat, I had to do pot washing at a time when I was really caught into a struggling emotion, and Fortunately, the pot washing the station had a huge window that looked out over this expanse of a snowy lawn with snowy trees. And so as I was washing the pots, every like few seconds, I would look up and just see the trees. And the being with nature, just in that simple way, allowed a little bit of ease to come in. So that was, again, the redirecting of the attention. And there's a lot of in-between ways between being with, just the being with, in terms of difficult emotions. There's a whole, I could do a whole talk on that piece. But you didn't particularly ask about difficult emotions, so I won't go there tonight. So in the working with being present for what's happening in our experience, that stability of mind is what allows us to meet moment after moment our experience with non-reactivity. And that is the very definition of concentration, actually. Concentration is the capacity of mind to be present in the moment without being pulled into reactivity or thinking about what's happening. Or if there is the arising of a reactivity, that the mindfulness knows that. There's different ways to talk about concentration. The basic definition of concentration is that stability of mind. The mind that is stable, able to meet what's happening in the present moment. We cultivate that stability of mind through either coming into the present moment and being aware of one experience, like the breath. The guided meditation that I did was very much oriented towards coming back to the breath and just allowing the mind to settle and become more stable. So that's a way that concentration develops. It tends to allow the mind to get very quiet over time. And it is partly because we're letting go of things and just coming back to this one thing over and over again. So it creates a stability of mind on that experience. It creates a stability of mind on the breath in this example. There are some huge benefits to that. It feels really good. It creates a container of ease, of kind of happiness, sometimes even as much as bliss can come from that meeting one experience over and over again, letting go of everything else. And it also puts us into a space of non-reactivity. Everything that we tend to react to is kind of off in the distance because our mind has gotten so happy being with the breath that it's like, oh yeah, that sound outside, oh, no problem. It's like, let's just stay with the breath. And so a lot of our reactivity tends to diminish as we stay with one experience because we're not drawn to other experiences. The breath becomes more attuned to, mindfulness becomes more attuned to the breath, and it gets interested in the breath. And so the reactivity to other things really diminishes, and we gain the appreciation for that. We get a sense of how concentration and how being in the present moment supports us not being so reactive. There's another way to cultivate concentration, and that is to simply just be with what's happening in the present moment, moment after moment, knowing, oh, there's sound happening, body sensations happening, dryness is happening, sound is happening, movement's happening, tension's happening, and just knowing moment after moment what's happening, that kind of meeting just what is the attention coming. So the difference there is that in one case you're turning the attention and picking something to pay attention to. In the other case, you're letting the attention pick what it wants to, but you're knowing what it picks. So the attention, the kind of you're letting go of the control of what attention is paying attention to, and just watching what the mind is naturally gravitating to moment after moment, but moment after moment knowing this is what's happening. An emotion, a thought, a feeling, a sound, a pressure, a tension, a vibration, moment after moment. That meeting experience moment after moment, again, doesn't leave much room for following off after things, thinking about them. You know, it's like if you're noticing, oh, there's sound. Oh, there's a body sensation. Oh, there's a feeling. There's not much room to be thinking about the sound that happened 2 seconds ago because you're already noticing something else. So that kind of concentration creates a stability of awareness, meeting a flow of changing experience. And both kinds of concentration support us in meeting difficulty in our lives. Both kinds of concentration teach us in different ways. The one-pointed concentration, coming back to the breath over and over again, teaches us by helping us realize that some of the ways that our mind goes off and gets caught, you know, it's like we're paying attention to the breath and we see there's a sound and the mind goes off to the sound and tends to start thinking about the sound. And so we begin to see that what our mind usually does, much of what it goes off and does and looks at and thinks about is like, 99% of it is useless. So we get that education with being attentive to the breath. It's like the breath becomes a kind of a reference point, and we see, what does our mind do while trying to be with the breath? We learn, well, it goes off and thinks about this, and it goes off and worries about that, and you know, much of what happens in our mind is just junk. And we begin to see the benefit of letting go of that. The other approach is kind of more about watching how our mind constructs its reactivity and how it goes about doing what it does. It's more the second approach of just watching what is the attention drawn to is kind of like letting the mindfulness witness the out-of-control nature of the mind. Because we're not necessarily trying to control what the mind is doing there. We're just trying to be present for what the mind is doing. And so we watch how the mind goes off and gets drawn to that and then gets pulled to that. And when I very first explored this question of being with just moment after moment, what is the next experience I'm noticing? A teacher suggested I try that. And sometimes this is called choiceless awareness because we're not choosing, we're not actively choosing, we're not actively deciding what to pay attention to. And so I reported to my teacher what happened to me, and what happened as I explored that. What's the next thing that the mind is landing on? Every single thing that my mind noticed was unpleasant. My mind was gravitating towards unpleasant experience. And I said to him, I don't think that's terribly choiceless. I mean, there's got to be something pleasant happening here. And so what I was seeing there was a habit of mind. The habit of mind to orient to unpleasant, to try to fix it, to change it, to get rid of it. Because this mind, the habit of this mind, had been, if I can get rid of all the unpleasant things, then I'll be happy. And so that witnessing of that the mind doing that began to give me that education about the habits of my mind. So both forms of concentration are useful. And the concentration itself, that stability in the present moment with non-reactivity. And non-reactivity, the word, another quality that comes with or is cultivated along with that practice of concentration is equanimity. That non-reactivity is really the quality of equanimity. And this I'll tie this back to the love and compassion, because the mind that is balanced and equanimous and non-reactive, the mind that becomes stable in the present moment, begins to naturally have this open heart that doesn't resist what's happening in the present moment. That heart is one that naturally opens to love, compassion, and joy. So this, they're all connected. Concentration is connected with equanimity, is connected with love, with compassion. These beautiful qualities, that as you cultivate any one of them, as you cultivate the ability, the willingness to be mindful, present in the present moment with whatever's going on, you're cultivating so many beautiful qualities. Whichever one seems most clear to you in the present moment, perhaps it feels like generosity is what's clear, or perhaps it feels like friendliness is what's clear, or perhaps it feels like just the awareness, the presence is what's clear. It's cultivating the others along with it. It can't not cultivate the others along with it. So that's probably enough. There's 3 minutes. Has that generated any thoughts or questions, more questions, little anything about anything I've said? Or you know, what we could do is we'll end with a little bit of exploring this quality of friendliness. Friendly attention. So, allowing your eyes to close. And allowing your attention to rest in the area of your heart. And seeing if you can have the sense, perhaps, of the breath. Almost an image, perhaps, it might be the breath moving through the area of the heart. And allowing yourself to think thoughts of goodwill for yourself. Just allowing yourself to connect with a basic wish that you be happy. We all have that basic wish. And with that, however you might be able to connect to that wish to be happy, just seeing if there can be an allowing sense of infusing the breath with that wish. And that might manifest as a sense of friendly attention to the breath itself. Or it might feel like just the breath. Or there might be a sense of connectedness. Thank you for your attention.